Hello, I'm Matthias Liu. This is number 0351, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0351. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Matthew Boustead from 7 Cent Brewery in Australia. They make belly button beer where the yeast comes from navel lint. How was this idea hatched?
A couple of years ago, Road Brewery from the States released a beer called Beard Beer. That one was fermented with yeast that they captured from the brewer's beers. We thought, well, that's interesting. What else could you get yeast from? After a few more beers, we started throwing around different ideas, and we thought belly buttons, that's a pretty interesting spot to get yeast from, something that will really challenge people, really gross some people out, but we thought it was the right balance. We didn't want to go too much further down south.
Andrew Fazekas, the night sky guy, is back with some interesting space news, including Elon Musk's plan to land a spacecraft on Mars in 2 years.
This is very audacious because it's an extremely heavy spacecraft. It weighs like an SUV even more, and it needs to touch down gently using retro rockets on the surface of Mars. And so this is an integral component of what would be necessary for humans to really step foot on Mars, is having that capability. And the real tricky part for NASA has always been being able to have that landing capability, that being able to really precisely land something and gently enough as well.
Mike Weiser, the editor behind the progressive news site QuietMike.org.
I started writing because I thought there was a need for different perspectives, alternative news and whatnot, and I thought I could add a little bit to it. Most of our readers, I'd say 90% of them, are from the States, and most of our writers originate from there. The writers are all volunteers. They all believe in the cause, the progressive cause, and they just want their voices heard, just like I did a few years ago, and that's working out so far.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0351, was Matthias Liu, a McGill University marketing student and one of a group of hotshot marketing students helping the Stuff File program find its financial footing in the online world. Thank you very much, Matthias, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? 60-year-old Victoria Reed was arrested in Brevard County, Florida, and charged with aggravated battery with a deadly weapon, domestic violence, and aggravated assault, domestic violence. Reed accused her husband of having an affair and forced him to sit on the couch at gunpoint while she threatened to maim him and give him post-traumatic stress disorder. She told him she would either shoot him in the face or the chest, but actually shot him in the knee, police said. But the bullet traveled up his thigh and lodged in his testicles, according to the sheriff's deputies. Youch. The report concludes that the man's condition is not known. Well, I'm pretty sure you can say that PTSD is now fully ensconced here. That's one hell of a shot. That's all I'm going to say. One hell of a shot. Okay, when Martin County, Florida sheriff's deputy arrived to check a burglar alarm at a business at 4:20 a.m., he was suspicious enough about a pickup truck parked nearby that he called in its license. The business building was apparently secure, so the deputy went out to check on the truck. Its driver, 25-year-old Gordon Raymond, told the deputy he had a dead battery and could the deputy give him a jump? No, said the deputy. The license check came back indicating the truck was stolen. Raymond first claimed he bought the truck on Craigslist, but later allegedly admitted stealing it from a church's parking lot because while out drinking, his girlfriend left, giving him no ride home. Mr. Raymond stated that at the time, taking the truck seemed like his best option, the deputy noted in his report, and that he had no other way to get home. Except that doesn't explain why Raymond used the truck to drive to work the previous couple of days, too. Raymond was arrested for Grand Theft Auto. Well, one way or another, it's no surprise, 420 was involved. Yeah. Chinese live streaming video websites announced female broadcasters are being banned from seductively eating bananas as part of a crackdown on pornography.
Come, Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Regulations handed down as part of a Ministry of Culture investigation into inappropriate and erotic online contents requires popular streaming sites to monitor all of the live streams they host for banned content including pornography and violence. The content the sites are seeking to block from broadcast include female live streamers seductively eating bananas, according to state-run news agency CCTV.
Come, Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
Female live streamers are also being banned from wearing stockings and suspenders while appearing on camera. The Ministry of Culture announced last month that it was probing the live streaming sites to do away with violent and pornographic content that harms societal morality. Social media users in China have questioned at what point footage of a woman eating a banana becomes provocative.
Come, Mr. Tallyman, tally me banana.
While others wondered whether the same rules would be applied to men who eat bananas while live streaming. Well, I guess they'll just have to settle for watching Shake Weight commercials.
Day-o. Day-o.
And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, police in Washington State said a need for speed wasn't the only monkey on a fleeing suspect's back. He also literally had a monkey on his back. The Burien Police Department said the suspect was clocked driving at 112 miles per hour by a Washington State trooper, and the motorist lost control of the vehicle when he took an exit. The driver crashed his vehicle into a large rock in a resident's yard and allegedly started to flee the scene on foot before returning to the car for his pet monkey. Police said the man and his partner in crime were found near the scene and both were taken into custody. Police shared a photo of the man in the back of the police cruiser with the monkey clinging to his back. Once we determined the monkey was not the driver, we released him to a family member since he was only engaged in monkey business, Burien Police said. Oh, what a witty police department they are. The man was charged with leaving the scene of an accident. I guess he just went a little ape behind the wheel. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest on the Stuff File program, shall we? There is a small beer maker in Melbourne, Australia, owned and operated by three engineers called 7 Cent Brewery. They have recently announced the launch of Belly Button Beer, perhaps the first beer in the world fermented from yeast captured from the brewer's belly button fluff. On the line with us right now via Skype from Melbourne is one of the beer makers, Matthew Boustead. Hi, Matthew.
Hi, how you going?
Fine, thanks for being on the program with us. The question right off the bat is, how did you guys come up with this idea? You must have had some beer in you to come up with this one.
I think most of the best beer ideas come to you when you've had a few beers. But this one, a couple of years ago, Rogue Brewery from the States released a beer called Beard Beer. And that one was fermented with yeast that they captured from the brewer's beards. And I remember having it at the time and going, oh, that's quite interesting. And a lot of people being weirded out, grossed out by it. And we thought, well, that's interesting. What else could you get yeast from? And after a few more beers, we started throwing around different ideas and we thought belly buttons, that's a pretty interesting spot to get yeast from, something that will really challenge people, really gross some people out. But we thought it was the right balance. We didn't want to go too much further down south. So that's where we came up with the idea. And then we gave it a crack, really. So, yeah.
And for the record, and I like the way you put that, there are some people who have gone further down south, and let's just leave that alone for now.
Yeah.
Okay, so I mentioned in the introduction there are three of you guys. I would assume that the lint came from either at least one or all three of you. I mean, how did you, what's the process involved here?
So what we actually did was we swabbed each other's belly buttons to get the lint in a sterile little swab and then started growing up the yeast from that. So we actually had three different cultures, one from each of us. And after going through the process to make sure that we were growing up yeast, so we actually plated out on an agar plate, and you can see yeast colonies, you can see other things growing as well, and then picked out the actual yeast colonies from each of our belly buttons, grew that up to a quantity that we could actually do a little test batch, just a 5-liter test batch, and we actually sampled each of us. So essentially we had a Brendan, a Doug, and a Matthew, or a Bowser beer. So we sampled each one and decided which one tasted the best, and that's the one we've run with for this beer. So it was pretty fun.
Okay, so are you allowed to say whose belly button lint this came from?
At the moment, we're asking people to guess. So once the beer is actually released, we're asking people to guess who they think it's come from. Don't know what they're going to base that on, but that's the idea. And we've got some plans for future for the three strains of belly button beer. So we're going to keep that one a bit secret at the moment, but we're hoping to do something interesting with that.
Okay, so while you won't tell us whose lint this is the genesis of, what was the process like? I mean, how difficult was it for the other two to realize that they were not the chosen one, so to speak? And conversely, did the third lord it over the other two?
Yes, the third definitely lauded it over the other two. It was interesting doing the taste, because although you wanted your belly button to win, it was pretty obvious. We thought that for the festival that we're releasing this at, that the characters from this yeast were the most interesting for the type of beer we wanted to make. That sort of worked.
And was there some objective voting involved? Was it just the three of you who made this choice, or were there other taste testers with an impartial palate, as it were?
No, it was just the three of us. We haven't forced this one onto anyone yet, actually. I don't think no one other than the three brewers have tasted this beer yet. So.
Okay, now there is an event that takes place, which is the 2016 Great Australian Beer Spectacular, right?
That's it. Yep.
When does this take place, and how big of an event is this?
So it's on in Melbourne. It's on the 20th, 21st, and 22nd of May. So a couple of weeks' time. It started in Melbourne, and now they're doing a festival in Melbourne, Sydney, and Auckland, which I can't remember the dates exactly for those ones, but if you look at the GABS website, they'll be able to tell you. It's last year, I believe they had something like 15 to 20,000 people go through the doors over the weekend. So it's a big festival. It's probably the biggest beer festival in Australia, and they have what they call festival beers, where it's 100 different brewers, mostly from Australia, New Zealand, and some internationally as well, brew a special beer, which is the first time it's ever been released, or it might be a one-off beer for the festival. And then they have other stores with other people, other standard sort of regular craft beers available. It's a great weekend. So,
okay, yeah. So it's a big weekend coming up in May. I've seen this story of belly button beer. It's all over social media. It's newspapers. It's made it worldwide. Yeah. There must be quite a bit of buzz back home for you guys in Melbourne leading up to this event you guys are the creators of belly button beer. What's the press attention been like for you guys?
Oh, it's been amazing. It's way bigger than we ever expected. We're always going to make a belly button beer. It's taken us a while to make it, get it going. But we thought we'll release it for Gabs because it's a big festival. More people start talking about it. We never thought it would go worldwide, and never thought I'd be talking to someone in Canada about this beer. Or I saw, I think it was on a talk show in America, I think, on Fox or something like that this morning. So it's huge. And yeah, locally it's been crazy. I was out at the pub the other night with a whole heap of other local craft brewers, and they're all just loving the idea and loving the attention that it's putting on us and the small craft brewery industry here in Australia. So.
Okay, so it seems like the sky's the limit. If this thing takes off, how do I describe this? How much navel lint does it take to grow the yeast to make the beer? Are you worried about running out of supply?
Well, I've got a good supply myself. I get quite a lot every day, but luckily you don't need a huge supply. We can grow it up from a very small amount, and then like most yeasts, you can you start with a small amount and you keep growing it until you've got a quantity that you need. And now that we've done this size batch with it, we'll have plenty of yeast to make another belly button beer in the future.
Okay, so everyone seems to be buzzing about this. Are there people you've talked to that have gone, ooh?
Yep. There's a lot of people who are like, nah, I'm not going to drink that. No way, no way at all. And that's disgusting. And then there's a lot of people on the other side of the coin who are like, that's the top of my list. I'm going to try that at Gabs. That's the number one beer I want to try. So it's polarizing. I don't think there's anyone who's just like, yeah, maybe. It's most people. It's like, definitely no or definitely yes. So.
And tell me, we've got just about a few minutes to go. Tell me a little bit about 7 Cent Brewery. I'm assuming you three guys, you started this brewery. This is not the only beer you make. So how long have you guys been doing this?
We released our first beer just over 3 years ago. We built the brewery over a year or two before that. We built it ourselves out of old ex-dairy equipment. We basically started as home brewers who thought, let's make some interesting beers that we want to drink and see if we can give it a go and see if other people like to drink it as well. So we've been doing it for 3 years. We have sort of three core beers, which are an IPA, an ESB, and a Belgian dark strong ale. And we've done probably over 30 different other beers that we like to experiment. This is the part of our brewery, so belly button beer is not going to be brewed by someone that does safe beers all the time. So we do lots of interesting things with lots of interesting ingredients, and like to have a bit of fun with it. So
now, my biggest fear is that you've gotten so much attention, and it hasn't even been released yet. You've gotten so much attention over belly button beer that now I'm afraid your guys are going to be literally drunk with inspiration. I'm afraid of what you might come up with next.
Oh, who knows? We've been contacted by a few people since we've announced belly button beer, with people wanting to talk to us about different things that they make at home that they think might work in beer. Like, there was this lady from just down the road who has some special type of mushrooms that she wants someone to put in a beer, so we'll catch up with her and see what they taste like, see what we can work together. But yeah, we like playing around with things. We did a beer which was probably before the belly button beer, the most sort of out there beer we've done was a black clam goza. So it's a salty sour beer, which we made it sort of a dark colour with some midnight wheat, and then we added clams to get that salty sort of seafoody character to it, which is quite interesting.
Well, congratulations, I think, to you guys for doing this, and good luck at the big event, the Great Australian Beer Spectacular, or GABS as it's known for short. People can find out more information by going to your website, which is 7 cent, and it's numerical 7, C-E-N-T .com.au. I thank you very much, Matthew, for being on the program with us.
No problems. Thanks a lot. It's been great to talk to you.
Matthew Boustead from Belly Button Beer. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0351, and you'll find links to their site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Choosy mothers choose The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And still to come on the program, we will have space news with Andrew Vazekas, the night sky guy. Plus, we'll meet the editor of QuietMike.org. We also have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. And, of course, much more Stuff File news right here, right now. On a program I also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Police in York, Pennsylvania said they arrested a young woman on a charge of disorderly conduct after her neighbors complained about her loud sex sessions. 25-year-old Amanda Marie Warfel was placed behind bars after pleading guilty to disorderly conduct in connection with her loud sex sessions that disturbed her neighbors' children. Tanya Saylor told investigators that she gave her children headphones before they went to bed every night in order to help them block out the music, threats, and sexual noises coming from next door. Threats? The sounds came from the other side of the wall of the room shared with the neighboring home. The noises lasted up to 3 a.m. Saylor has an ill husband and 5 children, all between the ages of 9 and 17. Her 17 and 15-year-old daughters share a room which shares a wall with Warfel's bedroom or sex dungeon or whatever is going on in that house. When the sex noise first became a problem, Saylor would knock on the door and ask Warfel to be quiet. That didn't help. Warfel kept the two girls up late at night, and they had trouble getting to school one time in the morning. On 2 occasions, police wrote notes to the school to excuse their delay. Wow. What exactly did the police write in those notes to the school? You know, perhaps the family next door is going about this all the wrong way. What if they just simply recorded the sounds of the lovemaking, set it to music, and then put it on YouTube? It could go viral. Just a thought. Well, anyway, it's better if you can't go to sleep because of sex noises than waking up to this. A North Carolina family said they awoke to strange noises and discovered a black bear eating a bag of Hershey's Kisses in their kitchen. Ashley Snyder said she was home with her husband and their young children when she awoke at about 5 a.m. to crinkling sounds coming from the kitchen. Snyder's husband, Benjamin, woke up and shot video of the bear while coaxing it to leave the house. Benjamin Snyder joked that the bear was a new pet. Ashley Snyder said the bear may have gotten into the home through the back door, which she said was left unlocked with the screen open. I feel grateful that I have such a brave and intelligent man to keep us safe by knowing exactly how to handle this ridiculous situation, Snyder said. Yeah, but who was the numbskull who left the back door unlocked and the screen open, huh? That's what I want to know. 49-year-old Rodney Gilliam got into a food fight with his brother Randy. The battle took place at their home in Muncie, Indiana. Both had been drinking, of course, and each claimed ownership of a pot roast. Rodney was pointed in his argument. He used a three-pronged meat fork to stab his younger brother several times, police say. One thing led to another. I feel so bad about it, said not Rodney, but Randy, the victim, who had wounds all over his head. A family squabble. I mean, like I said, I'm sorry. He's going to jail for it. I don't want to see him do that, he said. But I guess, you know, you shouldn't stab me. Sometimes a little brother knows best, huh? Yeah. A man in Israel who said he'd had enough of God interfering in his life attempted to file a restraining order against the Almighty. David Shoshan made the request in a courtroom in Haifa. Apparently, Shoshan took his request to court after trying and failing to raise the issue with the local police, which only resulted in several police visits. Court documents noted that God did not appear at the hearing. Judge Hassan Kanan tossed Shoshan's request, calling it delusional. The applicant does not need the aid of the court, but the help of others, the judge ruled in his decision. Oh, I'm sure the devil made him do that. Yeah. And finally in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, how delusional are people when they're on drugs? Well, I've got a couple of stories that typify that theory. Police in an Augusta, Georgia suburb arrested a meth-addled Ray Roy for battery and family violence against his wife in March. Roy was yelling about custody of their child, but his wife informed police they don't have a child. Wow. And number two, 38-year-old Johnny Hart was arrested after reportedly eating mulch from a hotel's landscaping in London, Kentucky in April while missing a court-ordered drug test. When police arrived, Hart was found in his wildly trashed hotel room. This is your brain. This is your brain on drugs. Any questions? Anyway, let's get to our next guest, shall we? Andrew Vizekas, the night sky guy, is back on the program with us to talk about some of the space news that's out there. Andrew is also a member of the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada, and he's the author of the highly anticipated, soon-to-be-released book, Star Trek, The Official Guide to Our Universe, The True Science Behind the Starship Voyages. He joins us on the line via Skype from right here in Montreal. Hi, Andrew.
Hi.
Nice to have you back on the program with us once again. Several things in the news these days. One of them involves Elon Musk, who has seemed to have ramped up his idea of getting a craft to Mars. We're talking 2018. That's not that far away.
No, I mean, this is what's so exciting about this. It's such an audacious plan. But you know what? Now I'm coming. I think the world is getting used to that from Elon Musk, of really pushing the envelope. And, you know, you have to listen to this man. You got to take note and take it seriously, because he really is really putting some amazing stuff forward, and he's doing it. And so in this case, we're talking about an SUV-sized spacecraft called Dragon 2 that he's been building. He's had mock-ups of it, versions of it, unmanned, tested. The first version, and they're building a more sophisticated version that'll be rated to be able to go into deep space, meaning beyond low Earth orbit. And so the idea here is that SpaceX run by Elon Musk, who's of course got his money from PayPal. That's where he got his fortune, and he's doing of course the Tesla electric cars as well. So he's got a whole bunch of things going on. But this rocket thing is really amazing because the actual spaceship is rated to carry humans, so astronauts. This Dragon capsule. And now what his idea is to actually take a version, an experimental version, and actually land it on the surface of Mars in 2 years' time. This is very audacious because it's an extremely heavy spacecraft. It weighs like an SUV even more, and it needs to touch down gently using retro rockets on the surface of Mars. And so this is an integral component of what would be necessary for humans to really step foot on Mars, is having that capability. And the real tricky part for NASA has always been being able to have that landing capability, that being able to really precisely land something and gently enough as well, because now, of the very thin atmosphere of Mars.
This spacecraft that he's sending to Mars, that he hopes to land there in 2018, will it be staying there, or does it get to return?
Well, that's the interesting part. I think it's right now the idea is to actually have it stay there. But I've heard that there, you know, the idea would be, you know, very interesting if it can actually lift off. Now, what's interesting is this, you know, it ties in a lot with what you're seeing SpaceX doing with its reusable rocketry that it's been having of late, a couple of really good successes using these retro rockets to gently land on a barge. I mean, we've talked about this before, this is something that is going to be integral, this design, this kind of technology, to lift off and bring humans back. So the Dragon 2 capsule is really designed to transporting humans, and it's capable of landing anywhere in the solar system, and of course lifting off is an integral part of it. So they're testing the technology, the retro rocket technology, right now. Elon actually posted just a few days ago, last week, some amazing video showing the capability of these what he's calling the Super Draco landing system that's attached to the capsule. And this is going to be a critical component of any journey to the red planet, really.
Okay, so we're talking a very short window here. Now, we're talking Mars in 2018. It takes a long time to get to Mars. So are we talking taking off by 2018 or landing by 2018?
Taking off in 2018, but remember, it takes about 6 to 8 months for it to land. So it depends on exactly when. If it's late in 2018, we can expect an 8-month journey and probably have it landing in early 2019. And that is, of course, Peter, if everything works without a hitch. You have to remember, there's been 43 robotic missions that have been, cast out towards Mars, attempted by 4 different countries. And you know what? Only 18 have been successful.
Mm. Well, if he is successful, he's going to sell a lot more cars. And the reason why I say that, you know the old saying, well, they can put a man on the moon. Well, if Elon Musk can put something on Mars, they're going to say, well, if he can do that, his cars must be fantastic.
I love that.
He's going to sell a lot of cars. Now, he's not the only person in the private sector who's doing something interesting in space. The Bigelow Aerospace Company is doing these private space habitats or inflatable modules. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so here what we're talking about is a different private company that's run by a real estate magnate, another private individual with lots of bucks behind him. And his vision... here with Bigelow Industries, what they're hoping to do is create an inflatable space station module. Now, just a few weeks ago, the prototype of this inflatable module was sent to the space station, and over the course of the next few weeks during May, it's going to be inflated, blown up, and we're going to see what's going to happen. It's attached to the ISS. It's called the Bigelow Expandable Activity Module, or BEAM. It's round in its form. It's completely inflatable. It's going to be filled with all these different types of instruments that will allow it to test how livable the environment is. And you know, this is the biggest reason why this is so interesting is that you know, unlike these rigid modules made of metal that you see, this inflatable measure offers more interior volume to mass. It making them is much cheaper, and also to launch them is much cheaper. They take up much smaller space, and just like an inflatable bed that you would have at home, you know, you can pack it into a very small space, and that all of this means a lot in terms of saving money, of being able to do this, and providing large new living space for astronauts.
Now, I'm assuming that this astronaut bouncy castle will have to get through some tests, one of the most important being, what if some space debris hits it? How sturdy is it? How rigid is it? How will it be able to handle something hitting it?
Well, this is just it, and they're actually going to be testing this idea that you know, there's different kinds of actual potential risks that it has to be able to mitigate. For instance, radiation is one thing. There's a lot of solar radiation, cosmic radiation. How does it handle this? Particularly solar radiation, when the sun has, you know, belches out a huge storm, and it's you know, Earth happens to be in its crosshairs of the storm. It arrives within, you know, within 2 days, and astronauts usually have to huddle into a very sealed, protected part of the space station. Now, supposedly this this inflatable module should have layered films of fabric and foam that'll provide better protection against radiation, and even micrometeoroids. So these are things that maybe micrometeoroids are, you know, we're talking about sand grain sized particles that could be flying in space at speeds of crazy speeds, like 200,000 miles per hour. And it should be able to protect you know, those layers, and it's sort of like a Kevlar type of layering that's on them that should be able to protect. But really, this is a prototype right now that we're talking about, and there's a lot of proprietary kind of technology that's in here that they're not really talking about. But a lot of eyes are on them, especially NASA's paying attention to make sure that the data that's returned from this prototype, it's a very modest one, but you know, it's small, too small for people to live in, but it's setting the stage for much larger habitat modules. So NASA's really paying attention.
And speaking of too small, we just have about less than a minute. I don't even think we have enough time to talk about it, but the Alpha Centauri mission that Stephen Hawking is involved in, involving nano-sized spacecraft in space.
Yes, another
audacious can you since it's small, can you shrink it down to a minute?
Yeah, I mean, what we're talking about is postage stamp-sized nanotechnology little spacecrafts that will be numbered in hundreds or thousands, lifting off into space with a fabric, little very thin fabric sails that are attached to it. Each one would cost about what your smartphone costs, and then a very high-powered laser beam from Earth would be beamed onto this fabric sail on each of these micro nano-sail spacecrafts, and push it up to 20% the speed of light, and it would arrive within 30 years at Alpha Centauri, which is 4.3 light years away. Hopefully, some of them will survive, take pictures of any alien planets there, and this would be the first time humans would reach out to interstellar space, to other stars and other planets around other stars.
Fascinating. It's like sending out mosquitoes.
Exactly, just like a swarm of them, and hopefully a few won't get swatted.
Exactly. Andrew, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Again, we should mention your book coming out, Star Trek, The Official Guide to Our Universe, the true science behind the Starship Voyages, and I believe that comes out in June, right?
That's right, on June, hitting bookshelves on June 7th.
We'll talk to you about it when it comes out.
You bet.
Thank you very much, sir, for being on the program with us once again.
Thank you, and clear skies.
Andrew Fizakis, the night sky guy, and author of Star Trek, The Official Guide to Our Universe, The True Science Behind the Starship Voyages. You can check out his website at thenightskyguy.com, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0351, and you'll find links to Andrew's site, plus links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. So you've come up with a great idea for making money on the internet. You create a website and begin making actual sales. You're living the dream. But out of the blue, you're sued by someone who's blind. They say they can't use your website, and you're in violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act. Think that could happen? Well, in America, it already has, a number of times. Recently, a federal judge ordered the owners of a website called Colorado Bag and Baggage to pay $4,000 to someone who sued them under the ADA, saying they didn't provide special accommodations to help the disabled. They also have to pay the plaintiff's legal fees, expected to exceed $100,000. Let's be fair. If the ADA clearly spelled out the requirements for websites, then lawsuits like this might be understandable. But it doesn't, and as the Justice Department works on writing the rules, more and more owners of websites are being sued, even Harvard University. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Hi, this is Wynonna Judd, and you probably don't think of me as a person with an eating disorder, but here's my truth. Eating disorders are real, and they are not just about losing weight. Eating disorders are the way you feel about your body and the way you treat yourself. For years, I have been a compulsive overeater, and it wasn't until its effects threatened my health, my family, and my career that I finally reached out for help. Recovering from an eating disorder is possible, and I'm living proof. But you have to take the first step, so I urge you to visit nationaleatingdisorders.org.
Actors, authors, quirky guests, and the comic book. It all comes to you here on the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about the publication QuietMike.org. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. But I got more Stuff File news I want to share with you. But first, just a mention very quickly that we love to hear from you at the Stuff File program. So send me an email with your thoughts or questions about the show and we'll respond. Just email me at peter@thestufffile.com. And some of the questions might even make it onto the air in our mailbag section. Also, Facebook users, we urge you to join the Stuff File fan page. It's easy to find. It's at facebook.com/thestufffileprogram. We'd love to have you as part of the fun. The more, the merrier. Now, let's get right back to the stuff, shall we? An Indonesian fisherman found a female figure floating in the ocean in March and hauled in the catch. He brought his mysterious find back to his village, believing it to be a bidadari, or an angel or spirit, as it appeared in the ocean shortly after a solar eclipse. Police investigated, fearing that reports of the supernatural being would cause unrest in the village. It wasn't a bidadari. It was a sex doll. They have no internet. They don't know what a sex toy is, the police chief said. Ah, yes. Oh, to live in simpler times. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a Texas County jail inmate who escaped custody while receiving treatment in a hospital was found in the dishwasher of his girlfriend's apartment in boxer shorts and wearing handcuffs with the chains severed. He took out the racks and made himself a nice little cubbyhole, according to Chief Deputy Glenn Blank of the Jasper County Sheriff's Office in East Texas. The inmate, 20-year-old Wesley Evans, was captured and taken back into custody after an escape that lasted about 24 hours. He is expected to face charges for the escape attempt. Evans had been in jail since March the 8th on charges of aggravated robbery, auto theft, and arson. He was originally taken to the hospital for treatment of a swollen hand. Well, you know, if he could fit in an apartment-sized dishwasher, clearly he doesn't have a problem with confined spaces, which is good in the long run, don't you think? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Mike Weiser is the mind behind the website QuietMike.org, and to quote their very own description, Quiet Mike is a progressive liberal website dedicated to bringing you honest reporting and opinion on topics not often covered in the mainstream media. So why is it needed and how did it get started? Mike Weiser is on the line with us right now via Skype from right here in Montreal. Hi, Mike.
How's it going, Peter?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. So the question I asked right off the top, why is it needed and how did it get started? I understand you started this back in 2012. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was the end of 2012. I started writing a couple years before that for a Montreal blog called Forget the Box. I started writing because I thought there was a need for honest reporting, I guess. Not honest reporting per se, but different perspectives, alternative news, and whatnot. And I thought I could add a little bit to it.
Are you not worried about the fragmentation of news? And by that I mean, it seems to be that if somebody is on the right, they have certain organizations that they gravitate to get their news, and the same for somebody who's on the left. And as a result, people are only getting to hear basically what they already believe in. In other words, preaching to their own choir.
Yeah, that's pretty much what social media has done. I mean, it was like that beforehand a little bit, but not quite as bad. I mean, things like Google and Facebook and whatnot, they pick up what you're thinking, and they cater to you, unfortunately. So yeah, that's pretty much what it is. And unfortunately, a site like mine uses social media to spread what we want to say, so it doesn't help in that regard. But I still get comments on things I write saying you opened my eyes, or they compliment me on having a different perspective. So that keeps me going.
In the 3+ years that you've been doing it, how has your site, quietmike.org, grown, and where do most of your readers come from?
It's grown pretty steady over the last few years. Most of our readers, I'd say 90% of them, are from the States. I mean, the market is 10 times bigger than Canada, and most of our writers originate from there. The writers are all volunteers. They all believe in the cause, the progressive cause, and they just want their voices heard, just like I did a few years ago, and it's working out so far. We have an average readership of about 1,200 readers a day, which suits me fine. I wish I was bigger, but it's growing every year, and that's all I can ask for.
Now, you mentioned the progressive cause, and I mentioned in the headline, in the introduction, the quote right from your site, Progressive Liberals, a website. And for a lot of people, I mean, those are certain buzzwords that people use, but they mean different things to different people. So when I say progressive liberal, what does that mean to you?
Well, to me, a liberal doesn't mean what it used to. I mean, a liberal in the last 30, 40 years has changed quite a bit. I mean, Bill Clinton was considered a liberal, but he had a lot of conservative values. So I never really considered him a progressive. In a lot of instances, he was a regressive. And it was the same for the Liberal Party in the last 15 years until Trudeau came into power. I'd say he's more of a progressive than Stéphane Dion or Ignatieff was. He's even more of a progressive than Mulcair, I would argue.
Okay, now, as you say, your publication is read by more Americans than anywhere else. So let's talk about the situation going on in the United States. And again, breaking down the idea of a progressive liberal, you look at the United States geographically, and for instance, you can find Republicans in the East who are probably more progressive than maybe some Democrats in the center of the country or further west.
Oh, for sure.
So again, those labels, progressive liberal, can mean different things depending upon where you are geographically.
Well, I think if you look at Hillary Clinton, she's a liberal. She's socially liberal, but not on economics, not on foreign policy. I think Bernie Sanders is a lot more progressive when it comes to those things. I think that's the real difference between the two terms these days. I don't like to refer myself to myself as a liberal anymore, because I would identify with people I don't like Clinton, like Mulcair, for example. So I like to difference myself from them all and call myself a progressive.
Where do you get your writers from? And I full disclosure, I recently wrote a piece for you, so I know where you got me from. But where do you get most of your writers from?
I advertise on social media. I advertise on Craigslist. It's mostly a voluntary basis there. We don't pay that much. But they come from all across North America, mostly in the States. I've had a couple of writers from Montreal, you being one of them. But I have one, the writer I've had the longest is actually from New Orleans. He's been with me pretty much from the start. I have most of my base is from New York. That's where I advertise most. That's where the population is. But I have some. I have one in Michigan. I had one in California before. They come from all over the place. You know, anyone who wants to speak their mind.
And again, since you say you get most of your writers from New York, are you worried that you might have what Ted Cruz refers to as, you know, New York values?
I don't mind New York values that much. But I mean, of all our writers that I've had, I've probably had about 50 in the last few years, when all said and done. And, you know, everybody has different views. Some are more centrist, some are very far left. And, you know, we've had arguments and we've actually attacked each other in different articles. It's just the way it goes sometimes. You know, we have Clinton supporters, we have Sanders supporters. It's a fine balancing act, and I do my best.
What if a conservative came along and said, I want to write for your publication? Would that be fine?
No.
No?
Not to be rude, but we are a progressive site, and a conservative would probably not have anything in common with us. If he did, and he pitched some ideas, I'd be okay with it for sure. I mean, a conservative can have progressive values, I suppose. But these days, it's hard to find.
Well, and again, do you find that's part of the problem that we are, generally speaking, and I think I started off by talking about this, where people get their news from, that as a society, whether you're right or left, we just seem to be so polarized and can't seem to understand any of the platforms of the other side. Like, no one's willing to agree. If you're not on the same side that of your own thinking, then the other person has to be an idiot.
Yeah, unfortunately, you see a lot of that polarization these days. I'm not really sure how to fix it. I mean, the media has been like that for a while, probably the last 30, 40 years at least. I don't know. I mean, places like Fox News obviously doesn't help. But a lot of, unfortunately, a lot of cable companies are taking after their model because they make the most money, and that's the bottom line. It's all about making money these days. It's not about facts or reporting the news as we used to see it. So it is what it is. We got to deal with it and try and change it. That's what I'm trying to do.
The name Quiet Mike, where did that come from?
That's a name, a nickname my friends gave me about 20 years ago. I met most of them all at the same time, and we always hung out in crowds. And they would all talk amongst each other, and since I didn't know anybody very well, I could never put my two cents in. So they all said I was quiet and started calling me Quiet Mike, and the name stuck.
You were just the one taking notes, right?
Something like that, yeah, for later.
So you continue taking notes. People can check out the website, which is quietmike.org. That's quietmike.org. Mike, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thanks, Peter. Anytime.
Mike Weiser from quietmike.org. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0351, and you'll find links to his site. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
It seems that idiots are constantly falling for the trap that is social media. Case in point, when 21-year-old Robert Darab of Belfast, Ireland, saw several photos of himself online, he helpfully tagged himself so that others would know who was in the photos. That's just what the police were hoping for. The photos were from a riot last summer, and investigators were especially keen to identify the man who they said had been especially prolific at throwing things at police officers there. 29 officers were injured, with one having his ear torn mostly off. Dara was difficult to identify because he had covered his face during the rioting and wore a hood. He pleaded guilty to rioting and was sentenced to 2 years. One of those years must be served in prison, the other on parole. Now, why? Oh, why? When you're smart enough to wear a hood during a riot, would you tag yourself in pictures of said riot online? Well, one reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0351. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0351. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR in Nashville, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCore in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. I'm your announcer, your name here. This is Ben Patrick Johnson. What am I being paid for this? What? You're flipping kidding me. Okay, that's it. Turn off the microphone.